Hockey Talk Show live with you here on a Thursday, May 2nd. The only hockey podcast available where you can have direct interaction with the host as we go live on Facebook and YouTube Live each and every time we do a show. Of course, we're available on every major podcast network, Stitcher, TuneIn, Apple Podcast, and Google Podcast, Spotify as well. Make sure you guys rate and review on the podcast, and make sure if you're watching this before or live or after or re-recorded or whatever, you guys are hitting that like button, you're hitting that subscribe button on YouTube, and you're getting that bell for notifications, and you're following on Facebook, not just liking our page. We have got a lot of hockey to talk about tonight, and we only have a couple of minutes to do it because game 4, Bruins Blue Jackets, is going underway in about 20 minutes or so. So let's get to the day's news. First of all, the New York Islanders down 0-3. What is their problem? I will tell you what it is. We're hearing a lot of stuff. The arena, the scoring chances, the this, the that, you know, all these things. I'm going to break down the Islanders' real problem for you with the Carolina Hurricanes on this episode. Plus, maybe the most shocking story of the day today, the Golden Knights have a new general manager. Where's George McPhee? Details on that. Joe Pavelski status. What do the Boston Bruins have to do to win tonight's game against the Columbus Blue Jackets? And Mike Milbury nearly craps himself on national television. All that and more on this episode of the Hockey Talk Show. All right, welcome in, everybody. If you're in the chat, let me know. Give me the thumbs up there. Shoot me a message. If you have a question, let me know, because we're going to be moving quite quickly on this episode of the Hockey Talk Show. Where do we want to start? Let's start with the New York Islanders. I'm hearing a whole lot of stuff out of New York Islander fans. Some of it is warranted, some of it is not. The thing I am absolutely tired of hearing about is the arena. Oh, the arena this. Oh, the arena that. If they were playing at the Coliseum, they would be down. They wouldn't be down 0-3. I mean, come on, guys. You've got to be kidding me. Nothing changes at the Nassau Coliseum. Does the Coliseum have a way better atmosphere? Absolutely. Does it have better sight lines? Absolutely. Does it have everything you want, everything that these modern arenas don't have? Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the best part of old school hockey. We don't have it anymore. I'm upset that the games aren't at the Nassau Coliseum too, but let me remind everybody of one thing. And that is that the New York Islanders are once again in a battle for an arena. Okay. They once again have an opponent in their arena fight. Belmont is not a done deal just yet. They are still fighting for the Belmont Arena. In fact, just the other day, the Nassau County executive, I forget her name, I'm sorry, just escaped my tongue, finally came on board. She finally came on board. That is another step in 400 steps that needs to happen. Now, if you haven't been following this, if you haven't been following the saga of the arena here, there's been sort of I wanted to do an episode on this, but the Islanders have just caught fire in the playoffs, and we've had to focus everything on that. But here's the thing. There's been, again, like in the past, an opposition to the Islanders getting an arena. And again, we have this mysterious, dark, whoever, millionaire, billionaire guy who probably wanted to develop the land and hasn't been able to. He has started a nonprofit. He's got lawyers. He's using shell companies. And he is trying to spark the fire of, oh, the community doesn't want the Belmont Arena. The community wants the Belmont Arena. And Newsday's done a great job of reporting on this, so you can read their coverage if you'd like. But my point is it's a long-term play here with the Islanders. They have a hill to climb. They got somebody opposing them now that's got a lot of money and is going to put a lot into a fight, okay? You can't have round 2 at the Nassau Coliseum. Why? Because everybody and their mother, Gary Bettman, the governor of New York, Governor Cuomo, have all come out and said the Nassau Coliseum is not sustainable for a National Hockey League team. They let them get some games there this year. They gave us the first round of the playoffs. They gave us that. Now, you can't turn around and say this arena is not viable for a National Hockey League team in one sentence and then turn around and go, oh, but we'll put all the playoff games there. You can't have it both ways. You can't have your cake and eat it too. Think about it as a long-term play. They are of the mindset that the Coliseum is no longer good. They've been very gracious to give us a couple of games there. If they continue to put games there, their argument that the Coliseum is not good is no longer valid. They have to maintain that play. Those are the cards that they're playing. It's the right cards. Does it hurt in the short term for us playoff-wise? Maybe. But long term, when you're thinking about setting up your house and being at Belmont and having a big, beautiful, modern arena that they always deserve, look, that's what they're going for. And so you got to do that. Rob, welcome in. Priscilla, welcome in. Wold Wolf, how you guys doing? The YouTube chat is great as always. Def made it. None of us seeing Carolina doing what they're doing now. Not none of us. Your old pal Ann had it. Go back a couple of episodes. I forgot when it was, but we sat on this very program and I pointed out the Carolina Hurricanes record from Christmas on. I was here with it. I told you guys, this team is red hot. Now, I didn't think that they were going to do this. I mean, this has been nothing short of amazing. But we knew that they were playing really, really good hockey. And they've proven that they are a really good hockey team. By the way, and here's why they're never going to get credit, because we all love Stamkos and Kucherov and Kane and Taves and, you know, we all love the big flashy players. I've never seen a team play such a simple garbage perimeter system as the Carolina Hurricanes. I've just never seen it. I'm not sure if Rod Brind'Amour even knows how to draw up a hockey play, because he hasn't proven it as of yet. Outside of a couple of alley-oops and stretch passes, I've seen no system whatsoever from the Carolina Hurricanes other than keep it around the perimeter, throw it to the net, play harder than the other guy. That is literally, when you look on the board of X's and O's in the Carolina Hurricanes dressing room, I think it just says play harder than the other guy, because that is all they do. And I've had a bunch of games to watch this team now. They literally just throw the puck around the perimeter where they are no threat for seconds and minutes upon minutes, right? And then they just throw it at the net and they crash the net. You know, they get a team on a 45-second, minute-long shift, and that's when they throw it towards the net. And they got some skill. They've got some skill on this team. Svechnikov, we knew what he was. But some of these other guys that have been showing up lately have been just downright impressive. Downright impressive. We knew what Nino Niederreiter was. He's obviously a great addition to this team. A lot of skill there, a lot of fight, a lot of dive in his game, but he's, you know, look, he's a skilled player. Most skilled players wind up diving at some point or another, but there's some speed there, there's some grit, and there's just flat out no give up whatsoever on the part of the Carolina Hurricanes. John, with a point. They're getting outplayed. The New York Islanders, even if it's ever so slightly, which I believe it is, they are getting outplayed. It's ever so slight. It is this much. That margin of error is razor thin. But the Carolina Hurricanes are playing the similar style of game as the Islanders, but they're doing it just this much better. And so far, this much has been the difference. I mean, we've seen this in the playoffs before. How many times does a team sweep a playoff round, all one goal margins? And that's exactly what the Carolina Hurricanes are doing. But this Fogle kid, this Warren Fogle kid, lightning speed, great shot. All these guys have been impressive. Brock McGinn in front of the net, Greg McKegg, there's just no give up in his game. And Jordan Staal's been a great, you know, veteran presence, as of course is Justin Williams. The guy just doesn't know what pressure is. He loves to thrive in every scenario. So what do the Islanders have to do to be different? The first thing I thought was, you got to score some more goals. And I know the temptation is there to say, well, you know, and I think I said it last episode, maybe we should bring up Josh Hosang. What else are you going to do? Now I'm thinking about it. I think it's a panic move. I think you literally trot your regular lineup out there. Pardon their pun. Priscilla with the question, should they change their lineup to get more creative? I don't think so. I think you keep the exact same lineup. I think you have got to just put more pucks on the net. And again, this is what drives me crazy. I got sports talk show hosts in New York here going, oh, the arena, my ass. Put pucks on the net. That's the answer. And there is no better illustration of that than what Josh Bailey did in game 3. Josh Bailey looked around and legit had nobody to pass to, flung it on net. I want you to watch the Josh Bailey goal again. Go back and watch that goal. He's not even looking at the net. He doesn't even look at Curtis McElhinney. His head is down. He just threw it to the net and it went in. Look at the first goal that the Islanders scored. They just threw it to the net and it went in. That is how you beat the Carolina Hurricanes. You need more shots. You have to try and outshoot them 2-1. It's the only way the New York Islanders are going to win. It is the only way. If they lose game 4 and it is 52-30 in shots, then, hey, congratulations. You did a good job. That's the only way I'll be happy. I'm less concerned with the score of this game than I am the shots on goal. Because the more shots you get, the better off you're going to be. Forget the arena. I'm already seeing we're missing Boychuk leadership. Forget all that. Forget it. Put the puck on the net more. That is the only answer. Also, the speed of the Carolina Hurricanes showed up big time in the last game because they were able to get a lot of forwards behind the Islanders' defense. I think the Islanders' defense is a little bit tired. I think that's where the Boychuk issue comes into play. Boychuk looks like garbage all the time, but damn it if he can't play defense. He is great. He looks terrible, but he gets the job done some way, somehow, all the time. I think we're seeing some of the inexperience. Let's not forget Pulak, Pelech, right? Devon Toews. This is all new grounds for these guys. This is their first time. So not that I'm making excuses for them, but you're seeing them, I think, kind of wear and tear a little bit. And the Carolina Hurricanes just come all game long. They just keep going. Their forecheck is fierce. And I think it's stifling the defense a little bit. It's nothing that cannot be overcome is my point. So if you're an Islander fan and you're freaking out, if you're a Carolina fan and you're on cloud 9, listen, game 4, I don't have to say this. This is not a hot take here. It's pivotal. Watch out if the Islanders win game 4 because this can slip out of your hands quickly. It really, really can slip out of your hands quickly. If you're an Islander fan, all you got to do is take this game and then worry about getting back to Carolina. Because Carolina is flat out undefeated at home. I mean, their record at home is just insanely ridiculous. It's insanely ridiculous. Let's see here. It's the second time the Hurricanes / Hartford Whalers in history have won the first 3 games of a best of 7 series. Carolina also started 3-0 against the Devils in 2006 in the Eastern Conference Finals and won the series in 5 games en route to winning the Stanley Cup. The Hurricanes have won 5 consecutive games in the 2019 Stanley Cup playoffs, beginning with game 6 against the Caps in the first round. Their only longer streak also came in 2006 when they won 7 in a row. Carolina is also 4-0 at home in the 2019 playoffs. The only other time they started 4-0 in the postseason was 2002. They are going to be a lot to deal with. The only way, by the way, McElhinney all the way. That's it for Mrazek. I don't know if he comes back. Rod Brindamore is on the record saying, look, I don't know. We're not going to rush him back. There are no need to rush him back. Liz with a great question. Watch out for the Islanders if they win the next game. Is that a real feeling or hopes because you love them? I am putting all personal feelings aside on this one. Believe me, there's a lot less cursing going on than when I have my Islander hat on and I'm rooting for the team. I really feel that way because this series has been so close. The series has just been so close. Any one of these games could have gone another way. And we could sit here and lament about blaming, referees and all that stuff. I'm not going to do that. The Canes have done enough to win. Last game, that forecheck put the pressure on Leonard. By the way, I knew that was coming too. I called it. I called Leonard giving up a goal because he played the puck twice before that. He's not a good puck handler. He thinks he is. He's got to stay in his net. Do I think the Islanders can win 4 straight? it'll be really tough. If I had to sit here and give you an honest thought, it's Canes in six. But if I'm the Canes, I don't want to come back to Brooklyn, and I don't want to go to game six. I really, really don't. Because the same way the Islanders defense is a little, you know, feeling the pressure, feeling the wear and tear, you can eat it. It's amazing how fast that can flip-flop back the other side on the Carolina Hurricanes defense, because they got a lot of players that are in their home stretch, that are in their first appearance in the playoffs, if you will. So that's my thoughts on that series. There was a good question in here. John, do I think Rice plays? I don't know what Trotz is going to do. My guess is Trotz comes back with Leonard, and I don't hate it. Leonard, outside of one mistake, you know, in game three, has been pretty damn solid. And again, the last thing I want to do if I'm Barry Trotz, and it's why I don't go to Hosang, it's why I don't go to Grice, is because I don't want to appear to be panicked. I want my guys to know I believe in them, and I'm not changing a damn thing. I don't love Clutterbuck in the lineup. I just feel like, again, he was skating a little gingerly there. I don't like that feeling. And the other part of this is captain versus captain. Anders Lee is getting outplayed right now by Justin Williams. And Justin Williams is a tremendous player. I think he's one of the best playoff performers ever. But Anders Lee has had a lot of great opportunities in front, and he hasn't been able to break through. And that is a key part of their game. He's been a big part of their offense, and Anders Lee hasn't shown up. It's just the way, same way I criticized John Tavares in the Toronto series. You can't pay a guy $11 million to be a great two-way defensive forward. You can't do it. The Islanders are there. They have a lot of limited scoring ability. One of their big scoring opportunities is Anders Lee, and he hasn't been able to convert. Brock Nelson right behind them. I don't blame them. They got to keep it up. But let's be honest. It's affected the New York Islanders. They're not getting the tips that they usually get. Lee's got to continue to fight for more position in front of the net. But the team itself has to put more pucks on the net. If I'm Barry Trotz, that is all I am saying. I am screaming more pucks on the net 99 out of 100 times. That 100th time I'm screaming, don't let their forwards get behind you. That's it. That's it. Forget the arena. Forget Grice. I saw somebody complain that the Carolina Hurricanes were wearing their third jerseys again. Now, personally, I don't like wearing third jerseys in the playoffs, but that is not a reason why the Islanders lost, because the Hurricanes are wearing their third jerseys. I mean, give me a break. And I'm not ready to be grateful yet that the Islanders made it this far. I'm not ready for the lamenting of, oh, you know, hey, nobody expected anything, and now we're complaining about Bupkis. This team can win. This team can really win. But listen, good on the Carolina Hurricanes. Nobody counted them in. Worse off than the Islanders. And they've been able to play this style of playoffs. Good for them. That arena down there is full again, and I'm happy to see it. I really am. Don Cherry and the Bunch of Jerks thing, they've embraced that, and they've turned that around. They've done fantastic. And Don Waddell, who I do not like as a general manager, has pulled the right strings and made the right moves. You look at the Calgary trade. You look at bringing in Anito Niederreiter. Mrazek, McElhinney was an incredibly good pickup. Again, it was one of the big blunders of Kyle Dubas' early general manager career, letting McElhinney go. In fact, I think a lot of the animosity between Babcock and Dubas comes from the fact that he let McElhinney go. It was a big mistake. And McElhinney has showed up for sure. But you got to get more net front presence. I want to see Brock Nelson in the slot. I want to see Lee in front of the net. And I want to see more pucks on net, especially from Josh Bailey. Matthew Barzal is a creative player. He's going to do whatever he's got to do. But you have got to get more pucks on the net if you're Josh Bailey. And if you're the Carolina Hurricanes, you need the same thing from Fogle and Niederreiter and Svechnikov that you've been getting. By the way, nobody put a body on Svechnikov that entire game. That is where Boychuk is missed in a big, big way. And I'd like to see a little bit more grit from that fourth line that is so famous. Speaking of fourth lines, let's go to the game that's about to start. Boston and the Columbus Blue Jackets. It looks like David Backes could be back in for the game this evening. I think the right move for the Boston Bruins and Bruce Cassidy is to put Backes in the net for sure. Put Backes in the game for sure. If it's between Carson Kuhlman and David Backes, give me Backes. The Bruins need to play a little bit of a heavier game, and they need a little bit more of that presence in front of Sergei Bobrovsky. I mean, there's another guy that's put it together. The thing is, you know, people talk about momentum and everything. To me, that stuff matters. Hot teams get hot. Hot goaltenders stay hot. The Blue Jackets are hot right now. I still like Boston in the series, but the Blue Jackets are hot. So are the Carolina Hurricanes. They just got it going on right now. I like the Bruins tonight. I hope they have Backes back in the net. Before we wrap things up, here's the most shocking move in the National Hockey League today that, again, nobody is talking about. The Vegas Golden Knights have promoted Kelly McCrimmon to general manager. I did not see this coming. I mean, I kind of knew it was a possibility, but this does not bode well for the Edmonton Oilers fans out there. And, I mean, this was a clear move to keep McCrimmon away from the Edmonton Oilers. George McPhee is one of the great general I literally can't believe what we're seeing here in the National Hockey League. You had two of the most unbelievable general managers in the game essentially just step aside for somebody else. I mean, I can't believe it. I literally cannot believe it. You saw what the Detroit Red Wings did with bringing in Steve Yzerman and Ken Holland moving on. Ken Holland's one of the great general managers in the game. How many cup rings does this guy have? And he stepped aside. And then you talk about now George McPhee, who literally built a Stanley Cup competitive team in year one with the help of Kelly McCrimmon. He is now stepping aside for Kelly McCrimmon. And this is for no other reason than the fact that they did not want to lose Kelly McCrimmon to the Edmonton Oilers. I don't know any inside information here, but it is clear to see that Kelly McCrimmon sat somebody down in the Vegas organization and said, hey, if Edmonton comes asking for me, I want permission to go interview. I want to go be a general manager. It is clear to see that. That's the case. And Vegas had no other choice but to say, okay, be the manager here. In a statement today, George McPhee said, what was important for me was that there was no disruptions to our staff. We worked so hard 3 years ago for an entire year to put this great staff together. And now that we're only 2 years old and we've got organizations 25, 50, 75, and 100 years old that are coming to talk to our employees, we'd rather keep the band together. And in this instance, it was easy because Kelly is more than ready to be an acceptable general manager. There's no doubt in my mind, had he interviewed, Kelly would have been the manager somewhere else. So why not do it here? It's a good move. It's a good move, but again, I just can't believe I'm shocked that we're seeing general managers step aside like this. You know, now McPhee's still going to have his place. He's going to become president of hockey operations. It's going to be this whole team mentality of running an organization that we've seen in the National Hockey League in the last couple of weeks. But again, I am shocked. And if you're the Edmonton Oilers, you are panicking. If I'm in Edmonton, I'm panicking more than if I'm in Long Island. And I am in Long Island. Because I'm looking around now and I'm seeing who's available. And Kenny Holland doesn't want to come here. And now Kelly McCrimmon, who is maybe one of the best candidates out there to become a general manager, has now been locked up. Where do you go? And the draft, by the way, is it's around a month away. The draft is around a month away. I don't know what the hell they're doing up there in Edmonton, but panic has got to be setting in. It has got to be setting in. Isles win in seven, says Brian. As a fan, I'm with you, my man. As a hockey analyst, not so much. The Carolina Hurricanes fans were pumped. That arena was super loud. Super loud, and rightfully so. They had every reason to cheer. But again, pucks to the net. Don't let anybody behind you. That is your key. Joe Pavelski could return for the Sharks during the second round, says the San Jose Sharks. We'll wait and see what happens there. Coach Peter DeBoer said Pavelski is making progress from an undisclosed injury. a leaky bleeding head is an undisclosed injury these days, and will skate and skated in San Jose yesterday. It will be the center's first time on ice. It was the center's first time on ice since April 23rd. DeBoer said Pavelski contacted the team trainer and others after San Jose 4-2 win in Colorado in game three on Tuesday. And the coach said he wouldn't count Pavelski out for the second round. So good news for the San Jose Sharks. I think San Jose takes that series. I still think Boston takes their series, although I'm not entirely sure. I do know one thing, and that is that Mike Milbury is terrified of the cannon over in Columbus. Let's take a look.
Well, Mike said before the game that he would be ready for the cannon tonight. That doesn't look like you're ready. You're tough, Mike. You were scared to death right there. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Silence is golden.
There's Mike Milbury completely losing it, almost having to change his suit pants there because that cannon went off, and it is it's a little alarming. It's a little alarming, that cannon over there. All right, that's it. Any last minute questions? We'll leave it here. Don't forget to like and subscribe on YouTube and Facebook. Of course, make sure you're following on Facebook. Don't just hit the like button on the page. Go over the like button and hit follow, hit see post first so you know exactly when we go live so you don't miss a second of the action. And same thing on YouTube, hit that bell so you're getting notifications so you know when we go live and do a show. And of course, on the podcast, rate and review on Apple Podcasts, shoot those 5 stars over our way. And again, as I always say, if you're watching live, appreciate it. And if you can take 3 minutes to listen to the podcast as well, that helps us put a little bit more into our kick so we can keep doing these shows for you guys. They're about ready to drop the puck in Columbus, Boston and Columbus. Give me the Boston Bruins tonight, especially if Backes is back in the lineup. Give me San Jose in Colorado. It'll be a 2-2 series for Columbus and Boston. It will be a 3-1 series lead for the San Jose Sharks. I also still love St. Louis in that series, but Dallas-St. Louis has been a great, great series. And I'm going to say this, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm taking the Islanders in game four, and here's the reasons why. I think Trotz can get them through. I think they'll get more shots on net. But more than anything, the other issue with the Islanders has been all year long, they've been the underdog all year long. And then they beat the Pittsburgh Penguins. And what's worse is they swept them. And all of a sudden, everybody said the same exact thing. Oh my God, give me Carolina. Don't give me the Capitals. And it's a be careful what you wish for scenario, because they came into that series, even though the Canes beat the Caps, the Stanley Cup champions, they came into that series thinking, this will be easy. I can't believe the Islanders are going to the Eastern Conference Finals. Now, down 0-3, they are back in a familiar position where everybody's counting them out. And there is legitimately no pressure on them. It's a no-lose situation for them. They can go off the walls, and I think they'll take it. I think if Carolina wants to close this series out, they have got to get pucks on net quickly, and they've got to keep their crowd in it. Even in Game 3, I felt that the Islanders, for the majority of time, controlled the play. Now, it's hard to tell because, again, the Carolina system is awful. It's just throw the puck around the perimeter, around the boards, and then just throw it on net until something happens. So it always looks like you're getting dominated and outplayed when in actuality you're not. But even considering, I thought the Islanders made a couple of mistakes that caught them, and I thought that Carolina was outplayed for a better part of the game. That being said, Carolina converted on their chances, and the Islanders haven't been able to. I think that changes when you're down 0-3. I think that takes a lot of the pressure off. We shall see game four Friday night from Carolina, 7 o'clock game. Give me the Isles. Give me St. Louis at home tomorrow night at 9:30. I don't believe we'll do a show tomorrow unless something drastically changes. I will let you know. But of course, if you hit the bell, you'll know. And if you're seeing the post first on Facebook, you will know as well. If not, we'll catch you on the podcast.